It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hey, Michael Steele podcast listeners, Michael Steele here with another quick take from the Michael Steele podcast. Check out what's going on right now.
Welcome back, everybody, to Michael Steele podcast. Like I said, we are having a great conversation with Lee Wright Rigueur, who is the author of The Loneliness of Black Republican, Pragmatic Politics and the Pursuit of Power. In a great conversation you had with Ezra Klein, you brought up, you got into the conversation around how the Republican Party began to move off of some of those key things that were of interest to Black folks. And there was this effort put in place by Ralph Bunche who was invited to come in and help them. Where have we heard that before? Mm. Can we find a Black man to help us get this right? And so they get Ralph, and Ralph said, all right, I'm happy to come in and put together an effort here about how the New Deal has failed the Black community and how Republicans can further attract what was then the beginnings of the losing of that Black vote. As you rightly noted, it began in 36. The party took note of it and wanted to do something about it. And one of the things he noted that the Republican Party should be, you know, should go further into its policies, no longer relying on the spirit of Lincoln and the well-worn, even at that point in time, well, Lincoln freed the slaves. Where have we heard that before, right? Excuse me. But the thing, the critical thing was, he wanted to argue and wanted the party to argue publicly that, you know, more effectively on health care, calls for universal health care, more effective on Social Security relief, finance, agriculture, labor. In other words, putting the party in space one-on-one up against the New Deal, right? And sort of expanding on some of those policies. But here was his caveat. Happy to do it if and only if, not only that you take this, but that you publicly release the whole thing. Mm-hmm. That you, this report that I'm going to do, put it out in public in the main, don't cherry pick. Well, what did the party decide to do? Yeah, we'll do that, sure. He does the report. It is a BAFO effort. He lays out exactly what should have been laid out and would effectively begin to rebuff and reposition the party relative to the New Deal. And the party said, you know what? We just want to put out part of it. We don't want to put out the whole thing. We just want to put out the part that basically attacks the New Deal. And he said, no, you published the entire report or nothing at all. When I read that part of your interview with Ezra, I could not help but think about my own internal battles with the party, which is why I at times just took the radical side road and said, you know, started talking about hip hop republicanism, started talking about, you know, started wearing purple suits, you know, because my point was, all right, you guys don't want to do the messaging the way I want you to do. I'm going to do the messaging myself, right? And Bunch, unfortunately, wasn't in that position where he could push the issue. But then you saw in 2012, Reince Priebus coming on the heels of the loss in 2012, trying to reset the party, comes up with the autopsy. Everybody's, oh, yes, it's great. We're going to do all these things to get Hispanics and Blacks in the party, particularly Hispanics, because that's the future. And then by 2016, they nominate a guy who says that Hispanics are largely murderers and rapists, and we're going to build a wall to keep them out. What does that say when you look at these two tales of the party saying, hey, we need help. Could you come and help us reach this new America that's emerging in front of us, whether it's post New Deal or post or pre-growth in Hispanic vote? And then the party goes, you know, on second thought, thank you for the report, but no, thank you.
So a couple of things. First, the one constant over this, you know, 100-year period is that the Republican Party has had the blueprint the entire time. It's not a secret. They keep coming back to it. They hire outside consultants. They pay them oodles of money. The consultants tell them the same thing that Ralph Bunche told them in 1936, again in 1939 and 1941. It's the same thing. It's the same thing every single time. So the response tends to be the same thing too, which is that the Republican Party reads the reports or they listen to the consultants and they say, you know what? This is brilliant. This makes sense. Absolutely. They crunch the numbers.
Yes.
And then they say, actually, no. No. And I think the big thing is that, and sometimes consultants are very open about this, which is that they are afraid of losing that which makes up their base demographic. They are afraid, right? And there are a couple, particularly in the 1970s.
Well, what are they afraid of, Lee? Yeah. I mean, what is their, if your goal is to expand the party and you're looking at the national demographics, whether it's 1936, 1976, or 2006, or what will be 2026, and certainly as we know by 2046, the country's going to be majority Hispanic and Black, right? And the party's going to be sitting on the sidelines with its thumb up its ass trying to figure out how that happened. And the reality of it is in 1936, as you said, in 36, 38, 41, you know, 2012, you got all these, you got a lot of paper telling you the future is now. It's here. It's coming. They ain't got to wait for it. It's here. These are the things you should do. Why is there such a reliance on white male Southern voters, which is a dying demographic politically, not necessarily I mean, I'm not saying white men are dying, but in terms of their share of the vote, they're being outpaced by other demographics that the party doesn't want to lean and get in front of that, but instead think that their future rests with these Southern white men. Donald Trump talking about make America great again, harking back to a white America of the 1950s that he grew up in, which is bullshit. It was just as bad for white folks in Appalachia as it was for Black folks in Mississippi in terms of the economic impact, which is the emphasis of his narrative. So what is it? What are we missing inside the party that makes them think that, oh, our future is still with white men?
Whiteness is currency.
There
whiteness is whiteness is money.
Sister laid it out. Never mind. Let me go back to drinking.
And you know, it's interesting because the Republican Party has repeatedly, I think, attacked the Democratic Party for over-reliance on identity politics.
Oh, they do it all the time.
They do it all the time without actually acknowledging that they themselves rely heavily on identity politics, right? That there is a constant, and I think this is what people don't realize, is that behind the scenes, people are very open about the fact that they want to recruit white people. You know, Phyllis Schlafly, who died a couple years ago, mm-hmm. died right before Trump was elected in 2016, so never got to see it come to fruition, said in 2012, like, our problem is not, you know, getting a bigger tent, it's getting more white people to vote. And she was like, that's who we should care about. Like, we care about power. We care about white people. Like, what she said is, she said the ugly parts out loud.
Yep.
And
now the party's acting on those ugly pieces, parts.
Well, I think the party thought for a long time it could play footsie with it, and it would be enough to retain power. And that they could play footsie with it while denying it publicly. Right. What's different about Trump is Trump came forward and was like, no, you can say the quiet parts out loud. It's okay. And was rewarded for it.
Right.
The second that he said Mexico is sending their worst, they're selling drug dealers, rapists, all of these things, that should have disqualified him from even being in the running. But the fact that the base ate it up and elevated him to the number one candidate in the primaries should have been not just a warning sign. That should have been a neon billboard in Times Square, right? Being like,
But here's the rub. Path. It was. And
it
Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, Jeb Bush, all of these folks said, time out. Y'all don't want to do this. This is not where we need to go. This is not Republicanism. This man is not a conservative. He is not ideologically linked to anything inside of our party. Politically, he is a tried and true Democrat, and he's not even a good one. And at the end of the day, this is not the direction we want to go. And then these MFers, in a heartbeat, flipped the script. Yeah. Was that because of that, to the point you just made, that base suddenly going, oh shit, we can be racist in person, out loud. We can embrace our whiteness in a way that we felt we could not before, when that really was never part of what Republicanism espoused, was this idea of being white first. You see what I'm saying?
Saw the writing on the wall.
They saw the writing.
And I think what is, you know, one of the clearest indications of this is, you know, the we nearly had immigration reform, right?
In 2006, correct.
Right. And it failed, but the majority of people in Congress supported it. It is now an anathema to support immigration, right? You can be ousted from the party from this. And I would say one of the things to point out is that even as political leaders supported immigration reform, the base consistently since 2008, 2007 has not supported a pathway to immigration, right? A permanent pathway to immigration. So I say that that's a long-winded way of saying that the base has enormous amount of power. And what happened with Trump is that he was the match, right? They were the kindling. They've been looking for a match for a very long time.
Yep.
Political elites in the Republican Party had been unwilling or unable to do that. And so I think you see people like Lindsey Graham, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, right? Who were, you know, were deeply entrenched within conservatism, looking and saying, there is no other way.
Yeah.
Right? There, this is. And I always tell people to pay attention to the loyalty component of polling, right? Because beginning in roughly August 2015, right, you look at the loyalty numbers of the different candidates, and Trump never dropped below 90%.
Nope.
Right. It meant that even that moment where like Ben Carson overtook him in the polls, right? It was like a hot second in November 2015. That wasn't real, right? Ben Carson's loyalty component was like 27%, meaning people were like, I don't really know if I'm going to support him, but for now I will.
Right.
Trump's base was like, we are with him. We are with him to the end.
Why that's important in the context of what we see and playing out right now as Republicans stand on a stage to debate the man who's not even going to be there because he doesn't give a shit about the process.
Correct.
and has made it very clear, not only will I not sign a pledge, I'm not even going to show up now. He's already said yesterday, I don't see a need to do any debates with any of these people.
Mm-hmm.
That touches to the core of what you just said. It explains, you have now given me the final piece of this, which I always thought was there, but now I connect the dot. When I saw the focus group, and I talk about this a lot on the podcast, so people have heard me say it before, in explaining Trumpism and why I think the press and the political class still get it so wrong is for what, mm-hmm. because of what you just said. In trying to understand it, you need to understand that, oh yeah, we'll dance and dally all over the place. We'll look, even right now, people talk about, oh yeah, we need somebody else. I think we're kind of past Trump. We're done with Trump. But those bitches ain't going nowhere. They are loyal to him.
Mm-hmm.
They are loyal to him like a hoe to a pimp. Mm-hmm. And that's about as street as it gets. At the end of the day, you can whip it, flip it, smack it down. The reality of it is I'm going right back. And that explains the white female mother of two divorced from New Hampshire, who in 2016 in a focus group in October of that year was asked, why are you supporting Donald Trump? And she said, and I quote, because he's just like me.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everybody. Thanks so much for listening today. Please go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star review. Heck, give us 2 5-star reviews. I love it. Or catch us on Stitcher, iHeart, TuneIn, or wherever you get that podcast thing on. You know how that goes. Peace out.
Is it just me, or have we all lost our minds? It's a question more and more people are asking themselves, afraid to admit they already know the answer. It's also a podcast, one about people coming together in a time of division and uncertainty to talk about culture and politics, compromise and connections. It's about challenging the norms we've come to accept as a society and working together to find common ground. Fierce and unfiltered, host Jennifer Horn is a former Republican strategist and party leader turned independent sanity activist. One way or another, we've all lost our minds. Join Jennifer Horn in the search to find them again.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21+. Terms and conditions apply.